Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
In this podcast, about this week's games and what they mean for Borough's season, the early bird prices increase, and answer your podcast questions. This is the Borough Breakdown podcast, and this is all your Borough Match Day chatter in a pod.
Support. Curtis Fleming is there on the edge of the air. Fleming for Craig Hignett. Hit it, Higgy. Higgy hits the trap. Goal!
Ravinelli coming alive again. Janino wants the ball played to him. Ravinelli spots out.
Hello and welcome to the Borough Breakdown podcast with Johnny, Dana and Tom. We are the Borough podcast that gives you all of your Borough Match Day chatter in a podcast. And what a roller coaster of a week for anyone being a Borough fan. You know, 2-1 defeat against Preston, the prices increase on the season tickets, and also a 2-1 win against Leicester, seeing Borough still well outside the playoffs. But who knows? It's Middlesbrough. You know, we can do the double over Leicester and we can't beat Rotherham. But guys, I did say it was a bit of a whirlwind, roller coaster of a week. What were your one key takeouts? Dana, do you want to go first? What's your one key takeout from the week?
That Borough need to keep the fans on side, because I know you mentioned it there, the early bird ticket increase. It's been a really disheartening week off the pitch, given that. And I was in the away end at Leicester yesterday, and the fans were just so supportive of the team. Even when we were under the cosh a little bit and Leicester were piling pressure on us, the fans really backed the players, and Red Faction were there. They had their banner up that said MFC, bit of advice, lower the price, which was really good to see. It was well received by the Borough fans. And there were other people pitching into the chants as well. It was just a really united away end. Borough can't take that for granted. And yeah, this week, I think the fans have been taken for mugs a bit with those price increases, and particularly the deadline. The very early deadline as well. So I think Borough really need to make sure that they keep those supporters in their court, because yeah, the 12th man is pretty powerful when it really rallies behind the, not just the team and the players, but the club as well. We all need to be together as one.
Yeah. And for you, Tom, what are you going to go for the one key takeout? You know, you've been fighting a battle off the podcast over the last week or two as well.
Yeah, you know, I probably lost about 2 stone in the last week just from being ill, but yeah, back this week, thankfully. I was all ready to go. I was all ready to rant last week, and then very much on the brink of death on Sunday morning. But yeah, I was going to say, firstly, completely agree with what Dana's just said there. Secondly, I mean, it's such a cliche, but what a typical Borough week that was. I managed to actually make it out on Valentine's Day. So I was obviously getting score updates off my dad, and I'm like, I'm looking at it coming through, and I'm like, I didn't expect anything less. You know, Borough losing away at Preston in a midweek game, or what's that, Emil Rees has just scored. Well, yeah, of course he has, because he loves a goal against us. I'm pretty sure when I mentioned him in January, Dana said he's been injured for about 2 years. So, yeah, it's obvious that he'd come back and score against us as well. But and then yesterday as well, just seeing us seeing us beat Leicester, I was like, you know what? I expected it. It's not even a surprise at this point. Both results this week are just completely expected. We'll probably draw against Plymouth next week now. But yeah, it was obviously, like you say, a roller coaster of a week, but it's one, you know, I'm really not surprised by.
Yeah, and for me, like, I think my takeout was like, borrow a box of chocolates, like, to really quote Forrest Gump on that one, because honestly, we do not know what we're going to get with this side at this moment or this club. I mean, it's just so strange, you know. Very typical Borough, obviously, to lose against Preston. Very typical of us to beat Leicester with more injuries, which we probably won't allude to in the show, but there is more and more and more. And that's kind of what Borough's season's all about this year. The inconsistencies, the injuries, it's all piling up to something you just don't even understand or can comprehend or anything like that anymore. But, you know, we can try and dissect it however we want. But we'll chat about the games against Preston and Leicester, because, you know, 2-1 games, one we lose, one we win. Emil Reese obviously scored for Preston, which was his first goal, by the way, Tommy was saying earlier, in over 400 days. So very typical Borough for us to concede a goal like that. But Tom, what do you think the results this week, given that we lost to Preston, we beat Leicester, are they like the epitome of what Borough's season's all been about this year?
Inconsistent, doing well against the teams at the top. Yeah, I'd probably say it is, to be fair. You know, against Bristol last Saturday, a home game, you should really be looking to win. Preston, a winnable away game, which we've then lost. Don't forget, we obviously beat them 4-0 at home, so it was winnable. And then you go and put in that display at Leicester yesterday. It's definitely the epitome of our season.
Yeah, and Dana, why do you think, we couldn't beat Preston? But then we can, 3 days later, change it up and then put in something such as a magnificent performance for a good 80-plus minutes against Leicester about 3 days later.
Yeah, I think you have to take both games in isolation, to be honest. I mean, firstly, it just sums up the Championship and it sums up Middlesbrough, as Tom said. And I mean, against Preston, it was so frustrating because we started the game well. I think we tweaked our approach slightly, which might have been due to the pitch. It was awful at Deepdale, it really was. But we went more direct. I think we were trying to pick up those second balls in midfield, and I thought Hayden Hackney was running the show up until we conceded. And of course we conceded after a spell of really good possession, and it looked like we were the stronger of the two sides. And then, yeah, we obviously conceded a pig shit goal. It was really poor from Rav. It was maybe a poor clearance from Clark, and then really poor from Glover as well, getting beat from a shot that really didn't have any power or... It wasn't one of those that like would sting the palm of a goalkeeper. And obviously everyone will mention that he got beat at his near post as well. So that was really, really disappointing. And then we got really sloppy after that. I think it was epitomised by Finazaz spinning really nicely beyond his marker and then playing a really simple 5-yard ball straight out of play for a throw-in. Yeah, it pretty much summed up our season. We actually had a really good spell of possession and we looked threatening in the second half. And then obviously what happens after that, we score. But every time Borough seemed to give themselves a good opportunity, we obviously go and concede another pig shit goal. I mean, it was really unlucky the way that it fell to Emil Rees. And then I think the commentator said actually during the first half that Borough have gone into halftime losing 10 times this season and haven't ended up winning a single game from that losing position at halftime. So you're giving yourself a bit of a mountain to climb at halftime. I mean, you look at the stats and you think, okay, 20 shots, great. We must have been threatening. We must have looked like we were the side that were destined to go on to win the game, but we didn't actually create much. There was one chance. We created one big chance and it was Marcus Forss's really instinctive shot, which Freddie Woodman reacted really well to. But other than that, we didn't really create an awful lot. And it was because Preston were packing the central areas every time that Sammy Silvera kept coming inside from the left. He was shooting. It was getting blocked. We did not attack the weaknesses of Preston and we actually played into their hands, unlike against Leicester, where we obviously saw that they play with that high line. They like to dominate possession. Okay, fine. You know, we could sit back a little bit, adjust our tactics, try to hit them on the counter-attack. So unlike against Preston, where we played into their hands, I think against Leicester, we absolutely exploited a key weakness of theirs. And I think we were really effective within that. So it's just the Championship in a nutshell and very, very typical of Borough. But I think the way that we approach both games, and the luck that we had in both games. It has to be said that against Preston, we were unlucky with the way that we conceded the goal that obviously decided the game for them. And then the way that we rode our luck against Leicester, fortune was with us in that game. So it's a bit of probably luck, contrasting luck from both games. And also the approach, I think, was much better against Leicester. There wasn't anything necessarily wrong with it against Preston. It was just that towards the end of the game, where I really wanted to see Borough try to attack them a little bit more, we just played into their hands. As I said, everything in that central area was getting blocked and Borough just kept kind of filtering it through that way.
Yeah, is that what you say would impress you the most against Leicester than Dan, the ability to like control the central area, you know, pick up on their weaknesses as well? Because I know there's a little bit we can chat about around with their really high line, but would you say like the ability to pinpoint their weaknesses and really exploit them was the big thing that impressed you the most?
I think so, yeah. I mean, obviously against a side like Leicester, given the possession that they have, you are going to concede quite a few attacks against them. I think the wide areas were particularly important for them, but the way that we defended once they got into the box from those wide situations was really good. There was one chance that Vestergaard had, and Dakar actually, they both should have scored from those situations. But after that, I think Ayling at the back post really was strong in his defensive performance, winning those battles at the back stick. I think the way that Paddy McNair was really aggressive on Keenan Dewsbury Hall, I think was really impressive as well. Obviously a player like Dewsbury Hall, he's going to have an influence on a game. You can't completely shut him out, but I think McNair was absolutely fantastic. It has to be said, because it was his first appearance since the beginning of December and he barely put a foot wrong. There's only one thing that he did wrong, actually, which was in the second half, he was aggressive and he pushed out and he kind of lost the flight of the ball and it ended up going to Jamie Vardy and he had the space, but thankfully nothing came of it. But yeah, I was really impressed with how Borough dealt with Leicester's threat in central areas and how we really countered them. We were a threat. Like, we absolutely deserved that victory. Obviously, we rode our luck, but we kind of earned it at the same time.
Yeah, and look, it was our first win in Leicester since 2001. You know, we've done the double over them now, the only team to do that in the Championship as well, which is, again, very, very typical Borough. And, you know, for me, when I'm looking at Leicester and how they've approached this season, I think they've been very fortunate in some aspect to keep a hold of a lot of the players that got relegated last year. There was no way that team should have been relegated, really, but there were. You know, I think that wage bill of what, over 70 million is really showing its quality, I would say, in the Championship. I can't really say I'm too overly convinced by Maresca. I think, you know, I would happily put a couple of quid on him getting sacked, be the first manager to be sacked in the Premier League next year, if I'm honest. it's a bold statement, but I can just see it, you know. But when I was watching them yesterday and how they were trying to play the game and, you know, try to have that really high line, the high press, and I thought it was really interesting because for a side who has very slow centre-halves and was able to, you know, have a lot of space in behind and keep that, isn't probably as great coming off his line as you think. You know, it creates a lot of opportunity in the way that Borough were able to break, you know, getting those central areas and also getting behind. I think Sammy Silvera had Vestergaard and Fice on strings yesterday. I thought it was really, really good. And I think the ability of Azaz to drop, Azaz and McGree to drop in when we needed to control the central areas, it was all accumulative in the game for Borough to go on to win the game. And, you know, the goals themselves, I think it shows one, a highlighted weakness in Leicester where, you know, defensively, I think they are a little bit suspect when they play so possession-based football because they're so expansive. When you are a very expansive team, sometimes you do create a lot of space in those central areas. And when you do catch teams on the counter and you're able to play out from the defence and the midfield and the forward line, which you spoke about last week, you can really cause a lot of damage. And I think we did that so, so well yesterday. And, you know, we were thoroughly deserving of the win. But you know what? I was really depressed going into that game on Saturday because I thought, we're going to get dicked. I can't see us picking up a win. The game on Wednesday night, I was so frustrated because I was really frustrated because of just of how we've been throwing games away and losing games we shouldn't really be losing. And it's not really disrespectful to Preston. I thought Preston were good. They do the basics very, very well. They were able to win the duels in the central areas to do some good stuff, but they're not very convincing, really, but just doing the basic things right. And we should have won that game against Preston, in my opinion, but we didn't. But according to Leicester, the system change, Tom, it's something that we've seen probably over like the last big games that we've played. We played against Aston Villa. We've done it against Chelsea. We did play three at the time with Leicester in the first game and now again in the second. So we've had some really good wins off the back of it. Do you think that this is a system we should stick to for the remainder of the season? Because I would say we look fairly solid, right?
I don't think it's one we should stick to till the end of the season, but it's good to know that we have that as an option. Back last Saturday, just before I got ill and when I still thought I'd be on the pod on Sunday, I remember sending you a voice note and I was like, I was getting really annoyed about how we conceded the goals against Bristol, the fact that we never changed anything, and it was same kind of thing with Chelsea, where we were just kind of consistently trying to play out, even though we were playing a team that was much, much, much better than us, couldn't really do anything against them from doing that. And I'm like, we need to kind of be able to change more in-game. And it's always, since last season, since what happened against Coventry, something I've wanted to see more of from Carrick. I thought Mark Robbins executed it fantastically in those playoffs. And it might not necessarily be that we stick to a set formation, but you can make changes within the game to win it. Or in our case, four big games, but still have similar sorts of principles. I think for big games, so like ones that we still have coming up, we might be able to try it, like Leeds at home, Ipswich away, etc. But I don't think it's something that we'll be doing Plymouth at home next week, for example. I think we'll be going back to the formation and system that we want to work. However, like I say, it's just good to see from Garrick now that he can change it up and we can play differently to get a result, but still kind of stick to our principles, just, you know, changing formation up occasionally.
Yeah, and that win, of course, seeing Borough go to 7 points to the playoffs. You know, obviously this gap's been getting bigger and bigger over the last couple of weeks, you know, the defeats, and like you were saying there, Tom, like the ability to... We haven't really been changing it, I think, and now we have the ability to change it. I think there's a confidence there between fans. I think the fans are really kind of bought in with the three at the back, which is interesting. You know, under Wilde, it was let's play four. We've played four for a while, we move back to a three. It's just very interesting that our football can come back around in these things. But, you know, when you watch Borough play, we very much play a three at times. We do play multiple systems, and that's how the game is now. But what do you think this means for our playoff chances? And I don't want to call on this for too long, because you could chat about the playoff race for the rest of the season on this show. And I don't really want to talk about too much. But do you think they're still done and dusted now, Dana? Like, I know we spoke about it last week in the Bristol City pod, and we were kind of on the assumption that near enough done. Are you still in that frame of mind?
Yeah, because I just can't see us putting a run together. I think Borough are the epitome of inconsistent this season, and obviously Housen and Hackney are now injured. It always feels like, you know, we get a couple of players back, we lose a couple of players. It was always my fear. Everyone kept saying that, you know, we'll be fine once we get our options back. We can't keep them fit. I don't know why. I don't know if... like, I'm not usually the one to think that a massive inquest is needed, but maybe it does this season, because the sheer amount of injuries that we've got is just incredible. But yeah, I can't see it, because I just think that we're too inconsistent. We blow hot and cold, and you need a really good run to materialise. It could happen. It's not out of the realms of possibility, but for me, I'm still leaning on the side of no.
Tom, are they done and dusted the playoffs, or do you still have a glimmer of hope?
No, I think they're done. I've had it kind of written off in my head since before Christmas, just because I never kind of looked at it and thought we had any sort of consistency there to actually make it. For January might have changed that if we'd have gone a little bit more all in to get a striker, but obviously we wait until the summer. I think we do have an eye on next season. But like I've said all along this season, I think we will click and go on a run. And I think by about March or April time, we'll just miss out on the playoffs. While it'll really click for some players, we'll be playing some really good football, and we'll just miss out on it. I think that's what we're kind of destined for this season.
Yeah, and on the players that you're saying that it's click and fall, Finazaz, he's hated by a section of Borough fans a couple of weeks ago. But 2-2 now, you know, he scored a lovely goal against Preston, then a lovely little thing yesterday. Do you think he's slowly starting to find his feet now, Finazaz, Tom?
Yeah, I'd say so. Bear in mind, like I said, due to being ill, I've still not been well up until yesterday. I've not managed to see a great deal of the games this week, so I'm having to go off, you know, extended highlights of what I can see and stuff. But he does look a lot better in what I've seen. Obviously, the goal against Preston, I was delighted for him to get that, just because it did look like he was, the first few games, trying to get a goal, but also trying to really announce himself with an absolute screamer. I remember one against Sunderland where it was like, if you just take a touch, just slide it, really. But you've tried to win it the first time and it's gone over the bar. And it did look at times in those games, like I say, he's just trying to score a screamer. But then he does against Preston, and then he scores a relatively easier chance in comparison against Leicester yesterday. But also what I was seeing in what I've seen is that his build-up play has never really been an issue, I would say, in, you know, even the in-person games I've seen. But it seemed better against Leicester yesterday. I would say, obviously, because of the position he plays, he doesn't have the same build as like an Aaron Ramsey who came in last year or anything. He does have a bit more kind of height and weight to utilize, and I saw him using that a little bit more yesterday, and it's helped him to, you know, in what I've seen, turn and get a pass off. It does look like he's growing in confidence, and if he can keep that up and kind of keep playing in those central areas, I think he's going to be one of the players who it does really click for come the end of the season, and, you know, by the end of, well, by the start of next season, we're all going to be clamouring to watch Finn Azaz, assuming, you know, he's not been sold after 6 months. But how often does that happen?
Yeah, well, Dana, was there a trend yesterday for Finn Azaz? I felt like I'd hear something in the commentary.
They were singing, do you want me to do it? Do you want me to actually do it? I'm not going to do it, but they were saying, ole, 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 Finn Azaz, Azaz. That's what they were saying. I was going to actually do the chant there, but it's just, oh, outside of a football, it's like an ick. Outside of a football setting, it's like, oh, stop that.
I'm not going to lie, I thought I was going to like throw you into it and just do it there, but I didn't get my wish. But I thought Finn Azaz was amazing yesterday. I thought he was really, really good. You know, he's a player definitely that you can look at him and go, you know, if we were able just to, you know, keep let him develop a little bit more and just like and really show his quality and let him bed in, we've got a really good player there. We really do. I think he's so comfortable on the ball. And I think if you wanted to look at his performance yesterday, like a moment apart from the goal, it's where he just nutmegs Harry Winkson, gets past him, and then obviously his last bit of action before I get subbed, but I thought it was excellent. And, you know, the whole team was excellent yesterday. And this kind of leads me quite nicely to one of our happiest moments of the pod each week, and it's the Prison Place. Yes, the praise and place, the only place we like to give praise to a player, coach, and staff member, Tom's lovely Croatia shirt, his retro Borough shirt from 1999-2000, I believe, the blue and white one. Oh, might be. It was.
Yeah, it was 1999. It's my birth year, but I don't know whether it's 98-99 or 99-2000, but anyway, whatever. Someone's like cursing the screen, like, how do you not know this?
It is what it is. It's definitely 99-0. I definitely think it's that one. But anyway, we move on, and also just give a bit of praise to tside.co.uk, because they've got our Bora Breakdown merch on there. If you fancy wearing a Nice Light Club shirt, a Shithouse Island shirt, we've got all of our merch there. So do have a look at those as well. The links are in the description below. But guys, who gets our place in the Praise and Place this week? Would you mind if I go first this week? Because I've got two players in mind that I would really like to talk about, in Sammy Silvera and Riley McGree, the two Australian internationals. For us, they're in my Praise and Place this week because, one, we have missed Riley McGree so much. He is just a wonderful, wonderful talent. And I've said this on this podcast many, many times, he is the best player at this club by a country mile. Just so good to watch. You know, we create so many chances. He gets himself in really good positions, and we just look so dangerous when he's on the pitch. But also, I want to give a shout out to Sammy Silvera as well, because, you know, just pre to the Age Cup, when he's came back as well, he's looked sharper. You know, I feel like he's slowly starting to find his feet a little bit, those couple of games before, and then he's just came back now. I feel like he looks like a player with a bit more confidence, and, you know, we can be frustrated sometimes with his decision making, but when he gets it right, there's a really good player there, and I think there's a bit of excitement for me around Sammy Silvera, and hopefully next year we can really see that as well. You know, we've got Finners as this. Sammy Silvera hopefully can find his feet more, and if we can keep hold of Riley McGree, then it's a quite an exciting front line as well. And, you know, we hopefully we can keep building on to that. But yeah, two players that really stand out for me. You know, you can go for more and more in terms of players. You could say the whole squad, everything. But for me, those were my two standouts yesterday. Maybe a shout out to Rad Vandenberg as well for just always being brilliant. But Tom, who is going to be in your person place this week?
Like I say, tough one for me this week, given the limitations of what I've seen. But I'm going to go with Finn Azaz. Two goals and two is nothing to be sniffed at. So, and obviously, finally getting your screamer goal that you've been aiming for you know, the past few games before that. So he's definitely in there. And then also I'm going to go with Paddy McNair, coming back into the team after so long out, coming back in as captain and you know, putting in a strong defensive display alongside Raven McClark to keep out pretty much the champions elect of the league for most of the game until Jamie Vardy scored, because, of course, he scored. Why wouldn't he? but... Yeah, I've, like I said, to be out that long and then come back in as captain when called upon is good work from him. So for deserved praise.
Yeah, and for you, Dana, to round it off, who's in your prison place this week?
I think it's only right I put Michael Carrick in there after starting the podcast last week with a little bit of criticism aimed at him. It wasn't, you know, I didn't go in on him. I just said that he's a coach in development, and it kind of shows. But he got it absolutely spot on against Leicester. It was the second time at home this season across their 17 matches that Leicester have conceded two goals. So it was a really effective setup. He said or hinted that he, you know, would change something. He did. And it shows that he does have that flexibility. And I absolutely loved that moment at the end where he went over to the Borough fans and they were giving it the, oh, and then he kind of like went, eh. Then he turned around, he gave it two bus driver uppercuts and then a good old slam dunk kind of fist pump as well. It was very modernised Gareth Southgate, and I really quite liked that. So, yeah, it was a big plus for Carrick this week. He got it absolutely spot on, and I think he deserved to be the winning coach at the end. He's done the double over Leicester. That's that's really good from him, and kind of up yours, Enzo, for 2006. We'll take the 6 points, thank you. You can have your UEFA Cup trophy. We don't need that. We'll just get the 6 points.
Yeah, the Twitter tacticals will not have been happy with that performance. But it is what it is. And, you know, I agree with you, Dana, on Mike Carrick as well. I think if you want to put another person in there as well, I think Mike Carrick is 100% deserving of that, and the coach staff do as well. To change things, to make us more solid, to find a different way to win a game is what you always want. Sometimes you have to go away from what you always do to achieve something that you need to. And it was an unreal performance, wasn't it?
Can I mention Lewis O'Brien as well, who had his best performance in a Borough shirt? I really like Lewis O'Brien, and it's such a shame that the injury has obviously held him back in terms of minutes. And he said after the game that he's still not 100% from it. It's not a case of, well, you're match fit, you're 100% fit. But really promising signs from him yesterday. I thought he was excellent driving at Leicester on the counter-attack. And I really want us to sign Lewis O'Brien on a permanent. I've always wanted that since he joined, so hopefully we can make that happen.
Yeah, I think it's just dependent on where Nottingham Forest finish, I think. Which...
They should be fine. There's some awful teams in the Premier League, probably more so than them.
Yeah, but they do have that potential deduction of points, which you need to probably talk about as well. Everton are in the mix as well with that again. So who knows, but I agree, I would love to sign Lewis O'Brien, you know, especially with, you know, Hayden Hackney most likely going to be leaving in the summer, let's be honest. Lewis O'Brien's there. Hackney's probably the easiest one to replace, to be honest, in terms of like position, trying to get that type of player. There is there. But anyway, that's for another time. Let's move on now to podcast questions.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Even on a budget, Quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I ask podcast questions every week. You get the chance to ask us a question by Twitter, Bora_breakdown, email theborabreakdown@hotmail.com, or by joining our Telegram chat. We'll 415 Bora fans chant anything but Bora, and we do chat about some things. You know, the match days are always a fun one. Everyone just loving it, especially when we win, because when we're getting big, good God.
And they love Green Matt in particular, by the way. Shout out to Green Matt.
Shout out to Green, whoever you are, Green Matt, shout out to you. No relation to Tom. But there's a question of the week. People might not get that, but, you know, some people might.
It nearly went over my head.
I know, there you go. But question we got for the day, I'm going to leave it as one, because we have a lot to talk about in terms of the early bird prices. But Ben Strickland sends us a question. He said, going into the summer, how many players do you think we need? Looking at it now, we may need to bring in five or six. It's an interesting one because there is some players out of contract. There's some players that will most likely be moved on. But Tom, I'm keen to hear your thoughts on it, and we'll probably get all of our opinions on it as well. So how many players do you think we need in the summer?
Yeah, I think like you say, there are potential sales and end of contracts to be coming at the end of the season. I think I agree with Ben where he says we need another five or six. He actually he put some out on Twitter the other day, and his choice for striker was the same as what you've said, and I'm completely 100% bought in on this, that we need to go all out for Tyrese Campbell. Obviously out of contract at the end of the season, that would be a great free agent signing to start off with, so that would be one. Ideally, I'd like another striker. I think we'll probably need another midfielder. Like you guys have just said there, I think I'd probably love that to be Lewis O'Brien as well. Right back, I think we might need another centre-back, and I'd probably just say like another attacking midfield option. So, yeah, that does put us on six. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what we do in the summer. But I'm hoping, given the sales we've made, I'm pretty sure, I read on one Borough before we sold Crooks, we were pretty much at a net spend of zero. Mm. Bringing in that Crooks money, we're probably on a positive net spend. Mm. So, would that be negative? Whatever way around it is, it's good for us. So going into the summer, we should have, well, I would hope we do, a little bit of room to spend financially. So yeah, fingers crossed we can bring in five or six of some real quality in the summer and have a go next season.
Yeah, and for me as well, like I think we will have hopefully have more money to spend than we have in previous years. If we can, obviously there's a bit around like the early bird on that, but I think for me, yes, definitely centre forward. I would love Tyrese Campbell. I really, really like him as a profile as a player. And if he can get going unreal. I think we definitely need a right back. I can't see us signing Aileen. I definitely can't see us signing Thomas either. And I definitely can't see us signing Sam Greenwood. So there's three players that you need to bring in already. Off that, if you want to add a third person for the left back role. And, you know, there's a number of players I think we can look at as well. Definitely centre forward, I agree with you, Tom. Probably another midfielder for Hackney and hopefully get another player in for midfield, because O'Brien's not going to be here and Neva's going to be house. And I don't think, maybe don't shoot the messenger on that one, but I just think that we do probably will need to refresh. But it's much better to be in this position now than we were in last year, where we were needing a lot of players, like 8, 9, 10. This year, it's probably only half of that, which is a bonus, I guess. But Dylan, what do you think? How many do you think we need?
Well, I've actually gone 7. I feel like that's quite a it's quite a lot compared to what yous have said. I've gone with a right back because I can see us moving Dykstra on. I've gone for a centre back because I can, well, McNair's out of contract. I can't see that changing, so he'll leave in the summer. I've gone for two central midfielders, including O'Brien, because I think Hackney will end up leaving. Coburn, for me, should probably go out on loan, so I'm thinking two centre forwards. I mean, we need centre forwards anyway. And actually a left winger, because aside from Rani McGree, there's not much depth really in that position. And I think it's quite a specific position, isn't it? Because I think you need to be a sort of off centre number 10. You need to roam into those central areas. So maybe a left winger as well that's versatile, that can maybe offer that traditional left wing role, but is also comfortable coming inside as well. So 7 for me.
Yeah. And I'm just on that winger point as well. Like, I would say out and out winger, like a bit different. Do you know what I mean?
On the left. Like,
yeah, on the left. So sometimes you can play with two wingers rather than just have the one winger in Isaiah Jones, or maybe play force there. Just having that option, I think it's always good to have options, Don. And if we have them, then absolutely brilliant. Let's move on. Let's talk about the big elephant in the room, really, around the season ticket prices, because, you know, this week Middlesbrough announced the early bird prices for season tickets for next season. The early bird prices have went up by about 5.5% to 6%, however you want to calculate it. And the deadline was initially announced to be the 15th of March, and it's the earliest it's ever been. So there is a spreadsheet. I want to credit Sean Wilson, who is an unbelievable statsman when it comes to Middlesbrough. And if you haven't got him a follow on Twitter, please do, because some of his stuff's really, really insightful and really cool. Well, we were looking at the deadlines in general. The average, really, we were looking at probably April time. There has been the occasional May deadline as well, but this was the earliest it's ever been on the 15th of March, and when it was initially announced. And then after consultation with a supporters forum and also with 12th man, Rob Nichols was probably the key members that were mentioned. Borough have moved it back to the 30th now, so giving people an extra 2 weeks, 2 and a bit weeks to get the payment in. And also Red Faction as well have been among a number of fan groups and communities who have basically been saying that they're against the prices, it shouldn't go up anymore, and they are planning to make a stand to that as well. So the 6% as well doesn't cover what Borough are going to be losing in terms of costs year on year. It's up by 12% across the group. But appreciate it's a business. But guys, I'm really keen to hear what you think about all of this, because it's a very touchy subject, I definitely feel like, in football, not just in this club, but also across the entire fan groups as well in football teams. I'm very interested to see what Sunderland do as well this year. But Dana, you said at the start of the show it was a bit of an on goal from Borough, really, to come out the way they have. What do you think of the season ticket increase for next season?
Well, I must admit, when I saw it and when I saw that mine had gone up, my reaction wasn't one of surprise or even shock, because I think I've been conditioned as a football fan to expect to be priced out of what is a working class game. And that is really disheartening, to be honest. And we can talk about the rising costs all we want. You know, we were in Middlesbrough supporters forum meetings, Johnny, where it was detailed to us exactly, you know, how much it's going to go up. But Borough aren't exclusive to that. They're not individual to that. I think every club in the Championship will be experiencing those rising costs, because, you know, the living is going up, isn't it? The price of actually living is going up. So why is it then that we have to increase our prices? You know, Sunderland will be an interesting one because they're the closest to us in terms of region. And if they don't go up, it's going to look incredibly bad. I don't know if theirs have gone up yet. I don't know what's been announced from them. But what I also think is, what I don't like is that Borough are essentially hoping that Borough fans' blind loyalty will keep them engaged and get them to purchase the early bird price, which it probably will. Like, I'll hold my hands up and say that I probably will end up purchasing an early bird season ticket, even though it's at that price, because all I've ever known is to follow Borough, and all my weekends have ever been is going to the Riverside and following Borough. But there's just a lack of incentive to it. Like, when I worked at Redcar Athletic, we did a membership scheme where there was so much more incentive than the football. I think they conceded that, you know, given the level that they're at in Northern League Division One, that the football isn't always going to be worth it. And even though it's a completely different level at Borough, it's still very much the same. Sometimes the football just isn't worth it. It's very dependent on success and style of play. So I think you've got to bring about different ways of essentially making that worth it. And at Redcar, we had basically an app which enabled fans to go to particular club partners like Rita's, for example, or Micro Pub on the corner near the Redcar Pier, and get a discount. You've mentioned it before, Johnny, go to the Riverside shop and enable season card holders to get a discount. There's just not a lot of incentive behind the season card, which I think makes it even worse. And then when it's compounded with a really cheeky and audacious, really early deadline, like, that was for me, and the coldness of the email as well, which didn't even say thank you for the support. There's no marketing, there's no campaign, there was just nothing. It was just there, pay. And I think that's what really pissed the fans off. And I tell you what, Borough were lucky that they had two away games after this, because if it was at home, it would have got very, very toxic. I think it was just an absolute PR on goal. And I think this needs to be a period where Borough need to reflect on what they've done, what they've sent out, the message that they've sent to their supporters, and think, is it worth it? Because, yeah, the fans are not happy, and they will take a stand, and it'll be far more vocal this time than it ever has been. And, you know, I back that.
Tom, I'm keen to get your thoughts as well. Obviously, we haven't really seen each other in the last couple of weeks, so I haven't really get most of your thoughts of it, but I'm keen to see what you think of it as well.
Yeah, I think one of the key things that Dana just mentioned there, which is the thing that really stuck out for me, was the coldness of the email that was sent out, and it didn't mention anything. There was no, you know, meet Woody's new bird or owl like that. It was just email there going, well, your season ticket, get your receipt for the season, and you can get more priority points for away games. So yeah, buy one. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, you've done that for mid-March, which, I mean, to be fair, like, I knew the early bird deadline would have been coming. I was planning more for the end of March or April financially, and I think most fans probably would have been. So for it to have come mid-March, which, like you say, is the earliest it's ever been, I was just like, what? There's no reasoning behind it or anything like that. The actual increase, when I'm kind of taking it into account, is like, it's an extra 30 quid on last year. And I think they did eventually say in the second follow up kind of thing where they said they've changed the deadline, they were like, oh, it's due to rise in cost. Like, right, that's slightly more forgivable if I'm kind of trying to justify it and I'm spreading that £30 over 23 games of the season. It's not that much more per game. Yeah, that's okay. I'd still prefer the price to be lower, but that's probably the most forgivable part of it for me. But I don't think it needed like a full-on marketing campaign or anything like that, but we needed something more than what we got. I would say even last year or the year before, like, you had the whole half-season ticket thing when the feeling was good under Wilder or the Wilder card. And like last year, it was built on a lot of good feeling. This year, there's very little to be positive around this season. I think the club are kind of aware of people's opinions on where the club's been as a season this year and what we're likely heading towards, and it's not the playoffs. There was nothing in that email which would say this is a good reason to renew or this is why you should be doing it like this early or anything like that, which was just really, really tone deaf. And I can't understand who signed that off, like what they were thinking when they signed that off to be sent out to fans, because I don't understand if they were expecting a different sort of reaction to it, because I'm looking at it and thinking, people were only going to react to that in one way. So what were you thinking? So yeah, it was the main part for me was just the way it's been done. I'm happy the deadline's still been pushed back. But I mean, for me personally, I am still thinking about would I rather spend 510 quid, I think it is now, on that, or would I rather save me money and do something else on a weekend? Because this weekend, not this weekend, this season's not really given much to be inspired about. And obviously, there's been nothing said about what we're trying to achieve next year as well. So it's like, give us a little bit more information and incentive to renew.
Yeah, and like on that as well, I think if we're able to get like the early bird deadlines up as well, I think if you both mentioned it around the deadlines, nine times over the last 15 seasons, nine times have been in April. So early, middle April has been the time where it looks to renew. Now, if you look at the 31st of March, it's been, now it's probably throughout the last 4 years have been in the end of March. And obviously we've got two there for May. For me, it was frustrating. I knew prior to the announcement that I was going up. I was at the sports forum on the Monday. I think it was announced a bit later on in the week that it was the week after that it was going to go up, and it was relayed back to rising costs across the season. Or have noticed a big increase in costs, like about 12%. So the season ticket inflation itself doesn't really cover the loss that Borough is making as a club anyway. So there's that. So Borough do have a bit of a loss. It's a balance for Borough, and, you know, where you kind of say, right, if we don't make enough commercial or make enough revenue this year, that means our loss is going to be higher. The loss is going to be high means it's going to be less potential incomings or outgoings, depending on what we want to do as a club in terms of on the pitch. So there is some sort of domino effect around it all, where if you don't get the revenue, you don't really have a bigger budget. The bigger budget, is the bigger budget enough to bring in the quality of player that you want to bring in to go for an amount of the division? And then there's also another aspect of it as well, where you look at the season ticket price and you look at it across the entire of the Football League, and you look at the Premier League as well. Borough is, arguably, I think it's fifth or sixth highest in English football, which is really interesting. When you look at it from a Premier League perspective, I think you can't look at it, because the amount of commercial impact that they have and the amount of money they make, and the same with like Bayern Munich as well, and all the big clubs, they can afford to have a really cheap price because they make enough revenue throughout the year to really afford that, the loss and the impact that they have, that can make millions and billions, some clubs. But for Borough, they're heavily reliant on ticket sales. And when you look at this from my perspective, I think that you should not always have majority of your revenue stream coming from one area. As it could be, you have to make different areas of where you're able to generate revenue. And sometimes it's going to be fan-related and your customer. There's one aspect where it shouldn't impact fans at all. Where is investment in brand? Where is investment in different areas to try and bring local support within it? And then also, what else can you do to really drive your reach or improve your reach in your customer fan base? Because I think it's very naive to say that Middlesbrough fans are only from Middlesbrough. It's not. A very good brand and a very good digital strategy can really open up a lot of conversations across the globe. You know, you can look at teams like, also Wrexham's a fine example, but they've got their own story, they're everything. Massive global fan base now. Sunderland, dare I say, increase their fan base by Sunderland till I die, which is, yes, we all laugh at them, but they probably could increase the revenue from different countries from there. So you've got to have a look at the content element of it, and there's three ways of doing that. There's YouTube, all that kind of stuff, this digital strategy that can really help with that. And Borough should not be naive in that world, because it is a very, very good thing for longer term success for that. Work with brands myself, I've done it myself, so I know it's definitely doable. But for me, the ticket price themselves, like, I'm a bit annoyed at how much revenue do you need, and also if Borough fans going to accept like mid-table, also recruitment as well. You can always bypass recruitment. There's always different ways that you have to impact the fan. Borough need to do more, they need to be better, and they have to improve that communication with the fans. I think there's a lot of gains that you have to make. And an openness and the ability to kind of communicate with the fans to say, this is what we're seeing, this is how things are increasing, this is why we need to do certain things, this is what we're doing. That will go a long way if it's very open and transparent, but it doesn't, when it's very closed box and you can't see what's happening, it raises more questions than answers. And I think this is why you see a lot of people getting frustrated, because they don't understand why prices go up. I think some fans can say, oh, we paid 8 million for Rodgers, so that's 8 million the key, which is probably not the case. But if Borough communicated that, you kind of go, right, well, that makes a lot more sense for us to, okay, well, this Rodgers money is going on the, I don't know, the Lecky bill, awesome, this is going on somewhere else. But then we've got this in our budget for next year. It's understandable, but we just don't do it. But they are doing more stuff with the supporters forum and group fan bases and getting on podcasts and stuff, which is you should be doing as a club. But we need to do more of it. And also, if you are getting people into these conversations with the club, you have to take their opinion and also implement it if there's enough argument for it. There's a number of conversations that you can have, but you've got to implement them too. But overall, I would say I'm disappointed with the increase. How did I expect it? Yes. And will we see an impact on Borough over the next few months? I'm probably going to say that we will see a bit of an impact, because it only takes a few thousand people not to renew this year. Well, a couple of thousand people not to renew this year. And you've lost a lot of commercial revenue, which you already would have got if you just kept it at the same price. So it's a gamble for them. But at the end of the day, it depends on what people think and whether they want to renew or not. And I'm really keen to hear the conversation as well. So if you do have an opinion on it, I would 100% put it in our comments. We can take that to a supporters forum. We can echo your opinion as well. And I think that's a kind of a place that we should really open that up to, with our Telegram chats there. We've got all that stuff there. If you ever have an opinion on it, do bring it, because we have that accessibility now, I think, as a podcast, which I never thought we would. I thought we were just a podcast, but it turns out we can be a lot more than that. But guys, is there anything else that you would like to kind of chat about in that realm on the season ticket stuff? Is there any other opinions that you want to raise, or are you happy to kind of leave that conversation there? Dana, do you got anything else?
Well, I was just going to say, I hate how football is. I think there's a systemic issue there with it. And I know this is because I'm not entirely clued up with like the kind of marketing strategy as you guys are, and like the commercial side of things. But, you know, just as a fan, like as a person, it is disheartening and completely disillusioning that I'm looking at, like, for example, the cost of a shirt. Like, I tried to get a Crooks Real Salt Lake shirt the other day. It would have cost me $179 to get a Real Salt Lake shirt with Crooks on the back. Now, I know that that's America, but I think football in general just has a big problem in pricing out its core. Like, it is it's supposed to be anyway, a working class sport, and it's so far away from that. It's untrue, and it's just, I hate what it's become essentially. Like, you go to the Riverside and well, not necessarily the Riverside, you go to the concourse of a stadium, the price of a pint, the price of a hot dog. Like, it's crazy how expensive football is, and it just shouldn't be the case for me. And I know there's like reasons behind it that kind of go outside of football, and football kind of, I guess, is just one of the many dominoes in that kind of sequence. But I can't stand the way that football has just become so bloated with money. People don't know what to do with it, and they're pricing out the fans, because the fans, at the end of the day, it's so cliche, but they are the very, very cornerstone of football clubs. And if you take out the fans, you take out the heart of a football club. And yeah, I guess just final point to leave at the door, that I just hate how expensive football is. I really wish it wasn't the case.
Yeah, and I echo that as well. Like, it's went pretty silly. I think when you have billionaire owners coming more and more into the game, the whole commercial output of football, from what it was even in, you know, early 2000s to now, the 90s, you know, there's a lot of money getting spent now, and it's very, very scary to kind of see that. And that in itself has a domino effect on so many different things. If you're paying a player over 200, 300 grand a week, you've got to have a few problems coming your way in the short term. And does anyone need 300 grand a week? I don't know. That's a normal conversation. Probably not. But it's, they're getting it, and you can't complain about it. And if someone's earning it, they're earning it, and that's it. But you've got to try and find ways to make more. If you're going to have to try and find ways to make more money, you've got to have to be creative. It's not like making money can be a very difficult thing for a football club. There's a lot they can do. And I think you've got to be very, very open and having a different strategy to really improve that. Like, and whether that's naivety or what, but Borough have to look at these different ways of doing it and finding efficiencies. And what I really don't want, and what would really upset me, is if I was at a meeting and they said, oh, well, we've always done it this way. That will really, really annoy me because you should never always do it that way. It doesn't always mean it's the best way. And we need to massively improve things. I think as a club still, I've been banging on the door for this for years around how commercial we can improve. Can you do a low ticket price, but on upselling in the stadium? Can you do more deals with like the pies and the pints? Can you do an investment where if you get a season ticket, you get 5% off the club shop throughout the year? There's so much you can do in that world.
Sorry to cut your point off there, because I've just got the membership. Like, this is a Northern League Division 1 side, right? Bear that in mind, because Borough can implement this being a side with obviously more tools to be able to implement something like this. But the membership at Redcar, entry to first team games, reserve games, women's home league games, there was a stay local card. So every kind of marked place in Redcar, like I mentioned, Rita's earlier, you would get the opportunity to have discounts in those particular retailers. 10% off all food and drink at Redcar Athletic, an invite to the quarterly members meeting, and free entry into the monthly quiz. Like, if you upscale this into Middlesbrough's area, it could do so much. And it's just that extra incentive that I think we just don't have. And to add to that, obviously, Redcar Athletic don't have a club shop necessarily. Although they do, it's like a tiny thing, though. It's nothing on Borough scale. As you said, their discount on the club shop. There's just so many things that they could do to just further bring people in and make people think, oh, it's worth it. You know, because at the end of the day, the football, it depends on whether the football's good or not, that people will sit back and say, yeah, that's worth it.
Yeah, and like on the pitch as well, like if Borough were bottom of the league, right, you could give a ticket away for £1 and people would still not turn up. It's such a volatile industry. So you have to play the long game. You have to play it. For me, my last key takeout of it all is invest in your brand. Invest in that brand and really try and make Middlesbrough a very more commercial, lucrative company in general. You can do that through so many different streams. And it's not hard. And it's not a huge investment either. You can invest a couple of £1 million into it. I've seen it and done it. Like, you can do all that and you can shift some really good metrics on it. But it's how you want to play it. Play the long game, and it's not just us, it's the fans 10 years from now that you need to worry about, and that's where I think you should look at too. But Tom, is there anything else that you want to chat about in around this section, or have you got any final points at all?
I was just thinking there while you've been speaking, I think one final thing that I think could help in terms of actually getting people to take up on season tickets would be hearing from someone like Michael Carrick or Kieran Scott and be like, look, this is what the aims are for next season, and this is why we need your support through buying a season ticket. Give a little bit more incentive to buying one, because I mean, there was price increase last season, and I think as much as people weren't happy with any sort of increase, and they're never going to be, it was easier to justify that with what was going on the pitch and the way it looked like the club was going, the trajectory we were on. It was like, yes, we might lose players in the off-season, but we might still be looking at some significant fees. And the way the club's been going so far, there's a good chance we'll be watching a promotion season next season. It hasn't panned out that way. And I think looking at how the season's played out, I think it is clear that the club are taking a longer approach to actually progressing and thinking, you know, we're going to develop players this season. We still don't have all the positions that we need filled, and we're probably waiting for certain players at the end of this season. But to everyone who bought a season ticket at the end of last season, they're just kind of like, well, this is crap. This is so far of a step backwards from where we were last season. And we've paid increased prices for it. I feel a little bit ripped off, which I know you can't really do with football because it is so volatile in terms of performances on the pitch and you know, where we might finish in the league and stuff. So you go to support the team. You don't go to see the team win every week. However, I think there was a realistic expectation last year that we were probably going to try and push on and get promoted this year, and it just hasn't happened. So I think for next year, it's just kind of like, what are we actually aiming for? Obviously, the club can't really come out and say if it's going to be another transition season or not, because that's going to negatively impact season ticket sales, as much as we'd love them to be honest and be like, oh, in that case, I'm not coming anymore. I'll pick and choose my games or something. But if we're planning on having a go at it next season, and you know, we are probably going to have all the positions filled that we've left empty this season, and next season might be completely different. Why don't you just get someone out to say that and be like, look, next season is looking promising for us if we can do what we want to do to do that, and come and support the team, buy a season ticket. So it would give a little bit more of a USP to buy in something, even though I think a key one would be what you've mentioned in terms of adding things that a season ticket might get you. Something like this might also help.
Yeah, and to round it off, I would say Middlesbrough are paying, as a club, are paying now for bad investments that they've made in the past. £16 million on Britt Assemble on ground, £30,000 a week. There's so many investments that you can look at, which we've got horrendously wrong. And everyone said about it in the past, if you invest badly, you'll pay for it eventually. I think we've done that as well. I think as a club, we've kind of got things badly wrong on the pitch, which has affected us off the pitch just as much. And you can't always expect a fan to foot the bill for that. And that's it. You can't expect them to be all one doing them.
The fans will always suffer at the end of the day. The amount of money in the game, the fans will always be the one that has to pick up pieces. And I don't agree with that whatsoever.
Okay, then. Well, before I round things off, we're just going to say that we've got a match next Saturday. They do have Plymouth at home. And we've got an opposition preview show coming later on this week with Argyle Life as well. But guys, just quickly, your predictions for the game, your score predictions, if you've got one, then we'll round it off. So, Dana, what's your score prediction against Plymouth?
2-1, Borough.
2-1 Borough. Tom, what are you going to go for in terms of score prediction?
I'm going to go 2-0 Borough, and also append that by saying Finazaz is going to make it 3-3 against his old team.
Ooh, yes.
Like
good
that.
Good prediction, and I think that Azaz might score as well. I'm going to go with a 2-0, and I'm going to go with Azaz and McGree will be our goal scorers. But guys, thank you so much for joining me, as always. To the listeners and viewers, thank you so much for listening and watching us. Don't forget to give us a comment on your opinion on the season ticket in prices in the comments below on YouTube, but also tweet us or message us on Facebook or wherever you got, you're most active on social media or the podcast apps. Do us give a 5-star rating, all that kind of fun stuff. Engage with us. Let us know your thoughts. We can always bring that back and collate that for you and push it back to the club. But for right now, we are like a box of chocolates, this club. We just don't know what we're going to get. This is the Borough Breakdown podcast, and that was our Borough Match Day chatter in a pod of the Borough Breakdown.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.